Today is Monday, March 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up...
It was just announced there was no collusion with Russia, the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
That's President Donald Trump speaking after special counsel Robert Mueller's report found no collusion by Trump or his campaign. Also ahead, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is cutting short his U.S. trip in response to a rocket attack from the Gaza Strip. It's all on today's International Edition. The White House today claimed vindication for President Donald Trump in the lengthy investigation of his 2016 campaign's links to Russia and his actions as president, calling it a complete and total exoneration. Trump's press secretary, Sarah Sanders, appearing on NBC's Today Show and CNN, said the American public now knows there was no collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign to help him win the election 3 years ago, and that he did not obstruct justice by trying to thwart the 22-month probe by special counsel Robert Mueller. She was declaring victory for Trump a day after Attorney General William Barr released a four-page summary of Mueller's report of his investigation. Barr said in a letter to top U.S. lawmakers that Mueller concluded that Trump and his campaign did not collude with Moscow, but also saying that an obstruction, while the report does not include that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him. Well, joining me live here in the studio is VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. And Jim, thank you so much for joining me.
Sure.
So why is it that this report does not exonerate the president from obstruction of justice?
Well, that's a key lingering question in all this, Kim. In a way, it's sort of an untidy conclusion. But this was at the heart, what Robert Mueller found was... some smoke there, if not fire, but he decided not to make a determination if there was enough evidence to move forward on the president for obstruction. So he referred it to the Attorney General, to the Department of Justice, and it was then that the Attorney General, William Barr, in consultation with Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, decided that there was not sufficient evidence to warrant any further criminal activity on the president. So we should review a clean bill of health, no collusion on the first part dealing with Russia. But on the issue of obstruction, clearly Mueller found some things there in terms of suggestive evidence, but it just simply wasn't enough in the view of the Attorney General to proceed. This will give Democrats, though, something to kind of probe further and push for. At the very least, they're going to push for the full Mueller report to be released.
And also then, so how will they then push forward with this?
Well, they're going to do it through, obviously, through their various congressional committees first, that they see as much of the report as possible and that it be released to the public. And we should point out, you know, that the president has been reacting in a generally enthusiastic way to this. But a little while ago at the White House with the Israeli prime minister, he was asked by reporters about how he felt the investigation had wound up. And it took a little bit of an angry turn on Trump's part. He was upset at how the investigation had gotten started. He said this should have been resolved a lot sooner, a lot quicker. There are a lot of people out there done some very, very evil things, very bad things. I would say treasonous things against our country. There's now a secondary move developing where they want to investigate how this all came about, the original Russia probe. And in fact, one of the key Republican senators, Lindsey Graham, was talking about this morning as well. He'd like to see a probe. So just when you think we're out of the woods and we're heading to move on past this, I don't think either side is ready to let it go anytime soon.
Yeah, it seems like there could be another chapter, and that had been my next question. It looks like some people are wanting the investigators to be investigated. So this could possibly
happen. To what extent does that help the president in a way, though, because he's already kind of got a victory here? This was a big political victory for him. Comes at a crucial time as he looks toward re-election. So it should give him a boost. But by dredging it up over and over again, you have to wonder what the political, you know, strategy is there.
So how much of a boost has this given him for 2020?
We don't know yet. We'll have to see some how the polls look over the next few weeks. It certainly removes a cloud, though. The Russia collusion thing was a big deal. And, you know, he has been going around the country saying there was no collusion. And now he's been proven right. So you can expect to hear that on the campaign trail. But it also clarifies for Democrats that they are most likely not going to be able to rely on any investigations to kind of weaken him or remove him from office, that this is all coming down to November of 2020, the next presidential election.
Great. Thank you. Very interesting. That's VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Well, moving on, we have Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He's due to meet with President Donald Trump today, then immediately fly back home, cutting short his trip in response to a rocket attack from the Gaza Strip. Netanyahu had been scheduled to have dinner at the White House tomorrow and also give an address to the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, a major U.S. lobbying group for the Jewish state. He pledged in a statement announcing the change in his trip that Israel would respond with force to what he called a criminal attack on Israel. The rocket hit a house in central Israel, northeast of Tel Aviv, wounding 7 people. Israel's military blamed the militant group Hamas for the rocket attack and said it was responding by sending troops reinforcements to the Gaza border. Netanyahu's meeting with Trump comes as Netanyahu's Likud party is lagging in opinion polls ahead of elections next month. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his chief rival, former Chief of Staff Benny Gantz, are both speaking at the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee meeting this week in Washington. But only Netanyahu is scheduled to meet with President Donald Trump and attend a state dinner at the White House. Trump announced a change in American policy on the Golan Heights, which Israel seized from Syria in 1967 and later annexed. Trump tweeted last week that the United States recognizes Israeli sovereignty over the territory and later explained the move in an interview with Fox News Business. He compared it to his decision last year to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
I was inundated with calls from all over the world, the leaders, mostly the leaders, saying, please don't do it, don't do it. I did it, and it's been done, and it's fine. Golan Heights is the same thing. This is sovereignty. This is security. This is about regional security.
It's not about Netanyahu's reelection.
No, I wouldn't even know about that.
Netanyahu is facing a series of corruption allegations, and the latest opinion polls show the new blue and white party headed by Gantz edging past Netanyahu's Likud. The Israeli prime minister has stressed his close relationship with Trump, and he lauded close U.S.-Israeli ties in a meeting with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo last week.
Our alliance in recent years has never been stronger. It's an unbreakable bond that's based on shared values of liberty and democracy and shared interests to fight the enemies of democracy, the enemies of our way of life, the terrorists that prowl our airspace and prowl our countries. And I think that working together, we've been able to achieve an enormous amount.
Netanyahu also thanked the United States for walking away from what he called the disastrous Iran nuclear deal. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Among the top stories in the world, the UN confirms today that 10 children were among at least 13 civilians killed by a recent American military airstrike in northern Afghanistan. The head of Ethiopian Airlines said many questions on the B737 MAX airplane remain without answers, and he pledged full and transparent cooperation to discover what happened. While U.S. airplane manufacturer Boeing says it plans to hold a meeting for 200 pilots, technical leaders, and regulators as it works toward returning its 737 MAX planes to service. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition. The United Nations reports thousands of people, mainly women and children, are continuing to flee to Al-Hol camp from Baghouz amid reports as the U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces take control of Islamic State's last stronghold in eastern Syria. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The United Nations reports more than 74,000 people, 90% of them women and children, now are residing at the Al-Hol camp. Spokesman for the Office of the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, Jens Lajerke, says many of an estimated 2,000 people who recently arrived were in very poor health.
Most of the new arrivals show signs of distress and suffer from malnutrition, fatigue, medical conditions, and war injuries, which is caused by months of hostilities and lack of access to food, medical assistance, and basic services.
Aid workers report shelters for the camp residents are inadequate to protect them from the cold, windy weather. Heating is scarce. Lajerke says humanitarian agencies on the ground expect an additional 15,000 people will be arriving to this already crowded camp.
The camp has significantly exceeded its capacity, and there's an urgent need for additional plots to accommodate those currently being hosted in communal spaces and big-sized tents, and also to expand the camp for the new arrivals.
The International Committee of the Red Cross is running a relief operation in the camp together with the Syrian Arab Red Crescent Society. The ICRC notes that not all of the families in Al-Hol are Syrian. It says a significant number of foreign nationals, mainly women and children, have taken refuge there. Red Cross officials say these people are in a particularly precarious situation. They say many want to go home to their countries of origin, but a number of governments do not want them back. The officials say governments have a responsibility to care for their stranded citizens, regardless of the reasons why they left for Syria. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thousands of French activists hit the streets once again Saturday for the 19th straight weekend of yellow vest protests. The countrywide demonstrations were markedly smaller and less violent than previous editions, possibly because soldiers were deployed for the first time to guard sensitive sites. Lisa Bryant reports the government was under heavy pressure to ensure calm after rioting last week.
The latest Paris demonstration almost seemed like the classic French protests of old. The sun was shining and the yellow vests who marched from southern Paris to the iconic Sacré-Cœur Basilica appeared in good spirits as they sang the national anthem and chanted for President Emmanuel Macron to resign.
Aujourd'hui, on s'aperçoit que tous les fins de mois deviennent de plus en plus difficiles.
Mechanic Frédéric Breyer, marching with friends, says it's hard to make ends meet at the end of each month, and he's worried about his children's future. The yellow vest protests erupted last November over a planned fuel tax hike the government later rescinded. They have since morphed to include a broad array of grievances. While the numbers are down, there is no sign of the protest movement ending anytime soon. Macron and his government came under heavy criticism after rioting in Paris last weekend. The president had been away skiing, and his interior minister was spotted dancing at a nightclub. The Paris police chief was fired, along with two other officials. This time, French authorities were taking no chances. They banned demonstrations in some areas, including the Champs-Élysées, where businesses had been torched and vandalized last Saturday. Riot police were out in force. So were soldiers, although none could be spotted near the main march.
Les gilets jaunes, on leur colle une image très négative, mais regardez comment ça se passe. Vous voyez très bien que c'est bon enfant.
Music professor Isabelle Darras said the yellow vests have unfairly earned a negative image. But look, she said, at how peaceful this protest is. Others support violence, including Hugo, a tour guide who only gave his first name.
Any major social laws were passed through violent manifestations, so I do hope it gets violent.
Amy Potting from Idaho joined the crowds of tourists watching the yellow vests, whose march skirted Notre Dame Cathedral and other key sites.
Seems like they're protesting the 1% and a lot of issues we have back home, too. Immigration's part of it, I think. Yeah. We don't know a lot.
Poll shows support for the yellow vests has dwindled, but roughly 4 in 10 French still back the movement. Some Parisians shouted insults at the passing marchers. This man, Olivier, said he understood their grievances, only he thinks there are better ways to express them, like voting.
Je soutiens les revendications des gens. Maintenant, la façon de revendiquer, c'est la leur. Il y en a peut-être d'autres.
President Macron launched a weeks-long debate to defuse the crisis, but it's unclear what his next step will be. The Elovists, however, are almost certain to be back on the streets. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
This is VOA's International Edition.
Are you looking for a good time this weekend? Hitting the club, house party, or maybe just chilling at home?
It's called Future Baby, Future Maybe.
Well, whichever way you want to roll, I'll get you listening, dancing, and relaxing all in one gorgeous hour.
Good time. Stop wasting a good time.
You'll meet artists on the rise like Dawit Sharonet from Addis and Swagger Boys Dynasty from Juba.
Tune in to Music Time in Africa with your host Heather Maxwell on Radio Voice of America.
There's also awesome current hits, traditional music, and classics. So get it all with me, Heather Maxwell, on Music Time in Africa. This Sunday, 15:05 and 20:05 UTC. Enjoy your weekend.
The UN Children's Fund reports nearly half of the 1.7 million people affected by Cyclone Idai in southern Africa are children. The official number of deaths across the region has now risen to over 700, but this figure is expected to increase once the waters have receded and the bodies of those who have drowned and gone missing are found. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Conditions in Mozambique, Malawi, and Zimbabwe remain critical. Thousands of people are still trapped by the floodwaters, many huddled on rooftops and in trees waiting to be rescued. The UN Children's Fund reports the situation for hundreds of thousands of children caught up in this monumental storm is particularly dire. It says many do not have adequate shelter and are in urgent need of food and safe drinking water. UNICEF spokesman Christophe Bouyerak says children are particularly susceptible to infectious diseases.
Without safe and effective water sanitation and hygiene services, children are at high risk of preventable disease, including diarrhea, typhoid, and cholera, and also increasingly vulnerable to malnutrition.
The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies reports cases of cholera have been confirmed in the city of Beira in Mozambique, the epicenter of the cyclone. It warns the risk of outbreaks of malaria, waterborne, and infectious diseases is high due to the prevailing conditions. UNICEF reports many schools and hospitals have been destroyed or damaged or are being used as collective shelters. As a consequence, thousands of children are unable to go to school. It says it is crucial for children to go back to the classroom as soon as possible. Officials explain many children are suffering from physical and emotional distress. They say school provides them with a structure and a sense of normalcy that can help them better deal with their anguish in this time of extreme chaos. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A Lagos-based waste management startup was awarded the King Baldwin Foundation African Development Prize last week. WeCyclers was given the prize for its innovative use of low and high technology to improve both the environment and the community. In addition, the company has created 200 jobs in the past 7 years with a focus on women, who account for 60% of their workforce. Wale Ababidi is the CEO of WeCyclers. He spoke with me about why his company has grown to be so successful in Lagos.
So WeCyclers is an incentive-based recycling company that focuses on low-income communities and allows them to get value from their waste. We go house to house in these communities, engage them about recycling, and then we also offer them incentives in the form of cash and gifts or household items in return for their recyclable materials. We collect those materials with our tricycles and vehicles. We then take them to our hubs, we process them, and then we resell to large recycling companies that make a finished product.
How has Lagos responded to your company?
When we first started, a lot of people thought we were crazy because we were just going around asking them for us to give them their rubbish. You know, people didn't really take us very seriously. But as we kept persisting and working with the communities and engaging them, when people actually saw that the model worked, you know, we started really small. We started with just one bicycle collecting from different households. We currently have over 25 tricycles and about 6 large trucks. But people saw the benefit of what we were doing. They saw that they were actually getting rewards, that we actually paid the rewards. And then they saw that their communities were getting cleaner. And so I think people just became serial recyclers. And we see people that bring in a day up to 100 kilograms of recyclables. So it's something that has caught up really fast, and the communities that we work in are impacted significantly.
Also, your company has created opportunities for women there. Can you tell me a little bit about this?
Well, WeCyclers, we're very proud of the fact that over 60% of the people that work for us are women. It actually wasn't by design. We just, when we first started, we realized, you know, we need to be able to sort these materials that we collect, you know, into types, into categories by color. And the type of equipment that you have to use for these type of jobs are very expensive. And in a place like Nigeria, where the cost of labor is low and there's a very high level of unemployment, we were able to hire people to do this very basic task. And most of the people that came were women. You know, they didn't have jobs and they didn't have a means of livelihood. So we offered them these opportunities. It's a low-skill job, and they were able to do this job. And it created a very good source of income for these individuals. What we are very happy about is that we are creating jobs for people that would normally not have a job. They would normally not have an opportunity to work and earn a living. So we're very happy about that aspect because we're able to create that opportunity for people. The other part that we do for women is the fact that a lot of our subscribers, I would say up to 70% of our subscribers are women. So they are the ones that take care of the household. They are the ones that clean up. So they are the ones that collect the recyclables and bring them to us. And so we're giving them those incentives and rewards in the form of cash. So a lot of them actually rely on this to take care of their families, pay for school fees, and also provide food for their families. So we see this as an opportunity to help empower women. We're very proud of that.
Now, your company has received this very distinguished prize. So first of all, how do you feel about this, and how will this help your company?
Well, we're very, very excited and very happy. I can't really express the level of happiness I have over the phone or over the interview. It won't meet up to the level of excitement, but we're very happy. WeCyclers, you know, we've worked really hard to get to where we are. We've had a lot of tough challenges over the years. We have a very small budget. We have over 150 teammates that work for us. So we have a very high level of responsibility to make sure that we can take care of these individuals. So this grant is going to go a long way in helping the company become much more effective and efficient. We can maintain our vehicles more effectively. We can also spend more money towards expanding and, you know, increasing our volumes, which in turn will increase our profits. We feel that this is going to take us to the next level and prepare us for even a larger investment from a major investor or even an institutional investor.
That was Wale Adebiyi, CEO of WeCyclers. He spoke with me from Lagos. This is VOA's International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
An international team of astronomers have authored a new study that details their discovery of 83 quasars that date back to when the universe was 10% of its age. To spot the quasars that couldn't be seen earlier, the astronomers used a new and innovative instrument mounted on the Subaru telescope in Hawaii. One of the study's co-authors, Michael Strauss from Princeton University, commented how remarkable it is that such massive dense objects were able to form so quickly after the Big Bang. Quasars are generated when supermassive black holes devours materials so quickly that a buildup of friction and heat produces powerful beams of light. Supermassive black holes, which are found at the center of galaxies, are so big that their mass of each can equal millions or even billions of times more than our sun. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition, and thanks for joining us. And thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and our engineer, John Dryden. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.